This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. With another 60 minutes of old-time radio, this is the Relic Radio Show. Welcome back. Thanks for joining me again this Tuesday. We're going to start off with The Saint. We'll hear an episode titled Unhappy Homicide, first aired November 6th, 1949. Then it's Believe It or Not, An Odd Way to Live. We'll finish off with Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday in Box 13, an episode titled The Professor and the Puzzle from January 9th, 1949.
Of The Saint, starring Vincent Price. The Saint, based on characters created by Leslie Charteris and known to millions from books, magazines, and motion pictures. The Robin Hood of modern crime now comes to radio, starring Hollywood's brilliant and talented actor Vincent Price as The Saint.
Waiter.
Yes, monsieur.
Waiter, will you tell the chef of this unhappy restaurant that he'd make a better shoemaker?
Monsieur, a shoemaker?
Look at this miserable concoction. It's called a salad.
But, monsieur.
Don't but me.
But, monsieur, I have something to tell you.
Yes?
Someone is waiting for you at another table.
Well, get back to him at once. Warn him against eating anything in this establishment. Tell him his life is in danger.
Mr. Center, there is something strange about the gentleman. I think he has a gun in his pocket.
Aha. More severe critic of food than I am. Well, tell the chef he'd better flee for his life.
Oh, do you wish to see him?
The chef? No, he'll have to look out for himself.
Not the chef, monsieur. The little man.
Hmm. He is little, isn't he?
Yes, sir, but...
Desperate air about it. Well, I'll go see him. How do you do? You wish to see me?
Mr. Temple, my name is Potts.
How do you do?
I need help. I'm the senior partner of Potts and Carter, Jewelers Extraordinary.
Extraordinary.
Earlier this evening, Mr. Carter was killed.
Oh, too bad.
Mr. Temple, it wasn't an accident.
Oh?
He was murdered.
Oh, I see. And the police are picking you for Queen of the May. And you want me to prove you didn't murder Carter?
Oh, no, Mr. Temple.
No?
No. I want you to prove I did. It's no use, Mr. Templer. I did kill Carter.
Well, why wouldn't the police believe you?
Because they couldn't find the corpse.
There's usually one around after a murder, you know.
Somebody stole this one.
Stealing corpses is a rather restricted profession. Where did you kill your partner?
In our establishment on Wiltshire Boulevard.
Well, that's a nice place for it. When?
Earlier this evening.
And then you phoned the police from the shop?
No, I couldn't bear the sight of Carter's body. I walked over to a nearby hotel and made my call from there.
And then?
I returned to the shop. I didn't go into the back.
Where the shooting had taken place?
Yes. I waited for the police. They arrived. I told them what had happened and led them into the back.
But when you got there, the cupboard was bare.
Yes, Mr. Templer.
No one had heard the shot?
No. You see, it's a business neighborhood. It was evening.
That's understandable. May I ask you a question, Mr. Carter?
Of course.
Are you tired of living?
Right. Oh, you mean, why am I so anxious to have the police leave me?
Yes.
Because I shot Carter in self-defense. He's a larger man than I am. He was threatening me with physical violence. I acted only in self-defense.
Oh, I see. Well, I'll drop you at your home, and, Mr. Potts, you've got a job.
Yes?
You've got to find your partner's body.
But I...
Now, ask yourself where you'd go if you were... No. No, he wouldn't be going anywhere himself. You better spend some time thinking about your friends. One of them might have removed the corpse in order to shield you. Or think of your enemies. Are you married?
Yes, I am.
Well, anyway, an enemy of yours might have moved the body to make the killing look like... Well, like premeditated murder. One way or another, Mr. Potts, you've quite a bit to think about, haven't you?
Mr.
Templar?
Hmm? Oh, well, my living room furniture is sprouting, or are you,
I'm Carter.
Carter? Carter?
Yes.
Of Pop and Carter?
Of Pop and Carter.
Oh, one of us is in a bad way. Either you're dead or I'm crazy.
I can assure you I'm not dead.
Oh, very well. I'll see a psychiatrist in the morning. Tonight I'm sleepy.
What did Pop want with you?
Hey, you've been haunting me, haven't you?
I've been following Pop. What did he want?
Oh, nothing really. He merely wanted to assure me that he'd killed you.
He what?
Killed you. Shot you, to amplify an already unbelievable remark.
He said that? He must be insane.
Well, eccentric, anyway. Mr. Carter, the situation is rather bizarre. A man confesses to a murder. The police do not believe him. He comes to me and asks me to prove him a murderer. I leave him and find myself confronting the man he claims to have murdered.
It
doesn't make sense. No, perhaps it's not intended to.
What do you mean?
I suggest you go to the police, identify yourself to them, and ask complete protection for yourself.
I don't need any protection. Pot wouldn't harm a fly.
No, but you're not a fly.
My dear fellow, the possibility of Pot really doing me harm is something I can't take seriously.
Why not go to the police anyway?
I couldn't without exposing Pot to ridicule and...
Your solicitude for your partner is rather touching, especially since he accused you of being a thief, of stealing from the firm, to be precise.
He said that?
Yes.
Then I have something to think about.
You've something to fear.
Nonsense.
No. No, a man has already confessed to your murder, and you're still alive. His confession may have been moonstruck madness, or it may have been prophecy. Good night, Mr. Carter. Cars they put out nowadays have rare and wonderful gadgets attached. Pardon me, but I'm trailing a fellow.
Who?
A man named Carter. Do you know him?
Mm-hmm.
Do I know you, or should I?
What do you think?
Carter's cab is well in sight. Just a moment. I'll take my eyes off the cab for a moment and... yes, I should. What's your name?
Care.
I'm Simon. Mm. You know, I only bought this car yesterday. Are you part of the standard equipment?
No, I go with the deluxe models only.
Well, I'm so glad I paid for the extras. Claire, what?
Doesn't matter.
Depends on where we're going or what we do when we get there.
This is a nice, quiet street.
Hey, hey, wait a minute. That's the ignition key.
I know.
Look, you've got the key.
Mm-hmm.
Well, may I borrow, eh?
No.
Now Carter's cab is out of sight. Hey, look, you.
This is as far as we're going. And now, Simon, what are we going to do?
Hey,
I beg your pardon. Oh, hello, officer.
Now, this may be a residential neighborhood, but...
Isn't?
It is. But that doesn't mean you should play house here.
Well, we weren't exactly playing house, officer. I was trying to persuade the lady to return my ignition key to me.
Is that a fact? Lady, give him back his ignition key.
All right, officer. Here you are, son.
Well, thank you.
Now, you take that ignition key and stick it in the lock.
Uh-huh.
That's right. Now, you turn it. Oh, you're doing very nicely. Now, you push the little button over there.
This one?
Yeah. Oh, charming. Now you shift the gear at the first. You release the handbrake. Now you're a bright boy. The next time you go out with a girl, make sure your ignition key isn't showing. Now step on the gas and get the heck out of here.
Are you angry with me?
For delaying me? Not especially.
Where are you taking me?
To a jewelry store.
Oh, you really shouldn't. You don't know me well enough. Which jewelry store is that?
Potts and Carter. You know the place?
I sure. My husband owns half of it.
Oh. Potts or Carter?
Potts.
They must have a nice assortment of stones.
What makes you think so?
Potts doesn't bat in your league, baby. Not in his own merit.
Well, I'm not so sure that's a compliment.
Brood about it, huh? Because, right. Hey, there's a light in the back. Are you coming with me?
No.
Why not? You think your hubby might be there?
I'm brooding.
All right. Just don't hatch anything.
Who's there?
Open the door.
Okay.
Templar.
Now, how right you are, Miss Carter.
What do you want?
Let's go inside.
I said
inside.
Well, come in. But...
I know. You weren't expecting company. The house is a mess.
What made you think I'd be here?
I wasn't sure, but it was a possibility, so I came.
Now that you're here...
I'd like to take a look in that back room where the light is.
Where the light?
And I rather suspect the vault.
Templar, I don't have to stand for this.
No, but I've got a feeling you're going to. Let's get on with it, shall we?
I was checking stock.
Well, let's both check.
Wait a minute. You mightn't understand.
Give me a chance to first, huh?
I don't want you to come in
Keep
here.
Keep walking.
All right, but... Well,
you idiot, if you think that by putting the lights out, you...
Carter!
Carter!
Simon!
Claire,
I heard the shots. I came up to Simon. Where?
The light switch is near the back door. I got it. All quiet now.
Simon, your feet.
Lying half across the doorway. Carter.
Eyes are open. Simon, they're open.
Dead. There's blood leaking out from under him. Let's take a look at the back room.
Uh-huh. Yeah, back window leading to an alley. So much for that. Now,
the vault's open.
Simon, how can you worry about that when the man's
I've
dead?
I've seen dead men before. The vault's empty.
I don't care.
Your husband might. The police certainly would. Well, I gotta go.
Oh, but you can't leave me.
You've got a job notifying the police. They wouldn't like it if you didn't.
What are you going to do?
Where do you live?
Bell Tower Drive.
What number?
39.
All right. Dial operator, ask for police headquarters, tell them all. Me, I'm going to visit with a man who confessed to a murder before it was committed. Curious to see whether he's going to stick to that confession, now that the murder is a murder. I want to see Mr. Potts.
At this hour?
Yes, I'm peculiar. I want to see Mr. Potts at this hour.
I'm sorry, but...
Save your regrets.
Good heavens, sir. You pushed me aside.
Tonight you win the badge for alertness. Now shut the door.
Yes, sir.
Where's Potts?
I refuse to...
You're not the usual, Buckley. You're young, big, and you look as if you've got muscles. Yet you let me push you aside as if you were a doddering old man. Why?
My father was a butler before me, sir. And his father before him. We're accustomed to dealing with gentlemen, sir.
Must be quite a come down talking to me. Where's Pot?
He's not at home, sir.
You sure?
Quite, sir.
Let's go look for him as though we didn't know he was out.
But I assure you, sir, that he...
Show me. Well, he's not in the house.
No, sir.
Don't look so smug. Mrs. Potts isn't in the house either.
You knew that, sir, before you looked.
Tell me, how does she feel about her husband?
I beg your pardon.
All right. You've given me the proper outraged response. What's your name?
Anderson, sir.
Anderson, make a speech.
Sure. My father was...
And his father before him. And I'll bet you they all knew exactly what cooked with the master and mistress. So do you. What cook?
Well, Mr. Potts is a very fine man. Mrs. Potts is
a very fine woman, and you take the high road, and I'll take the low road. Hey, company's coming. I will take the low road. Butler, who am I?
I don't know, sir.
Good. Then tell the police all about me when they arrive. And they'll be here soon. It'll give them something to think about besides Mrs. Potts. And, Anderson?
Yes, sir?
You think about something besides Mrs. Potts, too. Something like a murder, hmm?
Good afternoon, sir. Oh.
Yes, only Simon here.
Hello, Simon.
Business as usual here at Potts and Carter, hmm?
Yes, usual enough, I suppose, with Carter lying in the morgue and my husband.
Where?
Nobody knows.
Police looking for him?
Yes.
Warrant out for him?
No, of course not.
Then whom have they in mind for Carter's murder?
The burglar, it's obvious what happened last night. Someone was burgling the vault. Carter surprised him. The burglar shot Carter.
It's a theory with a great many pleasant aspects. It doesn't explain your husband's confession, though.
Well, he was overworked. He was tired. He didn't know what he was saying. Lisa afraid that maybe he'd lost his mind or something.
Yeah, I like that or something better. The theory doesn't explain your husband's accusations against Carter. Accusations of theft.
Simon, I don't know anything about all this.
Then why your act in the car last night?
I was worried about my husband, about Carter. And then I've always wanted to meet you.
Oh. Why?
Well, it's not the kind of thing I can talk about coldly like this.
Well, we must discuss it warmly. Some other time. Right now, what about Anderson, your butler?
Anderson?
I don't trust him. I know it's not done this year, mistrusting butlers, but I have a feeling he knows more than he should.
More than he should about what?
Why don't you find out?
What? Could I?
By discussing things with him. Warmly.
I'm not so sure I'd like that.
I'm not making friends today. Just influencing people.
I can't imagine what Anderson would or wouldn't know.
Stimulate your imagination by going out to the house now and working on him.
You really think it's important?
Very important. Now run along.
Well, all right, but for sure.
I'll lock up. You go on.
Well, I'll see you later.
I'll be at home, stirring up the furnace.
Simon, you don't have to have a furnace. Be warm.
Well, first the back door. Locked. And now the front door. Locked. Now?
Hey.
Yes?
Hey, Sal.
Yes?
That's your heap over there?
Yes, it is.
Better take a cab.
I like my heap.
Now, don't look now, but some low characters let the air out a couple of your tires.
Oh. Well, then suppose we go for a ride in your cab. 39 Bell Tower Drive. Hmm?
Okay.
Say, did you happen to notice the happy prankster who deflated my tire?
Sure I noticed her. Why not? I'm under 80.
Oh, well, why didn't you stop her?
Mister, I'm a married man. That means I'm cautious. For all I knew, maybe you're the kind of fellow likes a girl to deflate his tires for him.
It depends on the circumstances, Cabby. Not so early in the morning.
Okay. Next time I'll know you don't like a girl to deflate your tires for you in the morning. You don't think it's fun.
No, I think it's murder.
Nine Bell Tower Drive up ahead.
Okay. Pull over here.
Okay. Nice stuff. What, I should wait for you?
We'll both wait.
For somebody to get to the house?
No, for someone to leave it.
Hey. Hey, mister.
Yeah?
There's a guy leaving the house now, getting into a car.
Good. Anderson, follow the car.
Okay. Not too close, huh?
Not too close.
There he goes. Well, we go too. Hope he ain't going on a long trip. I ain't got too much gas in the tank.
He's going on a very long trip, and yet I don't think he's going far.
Huh?
Now, space is relative, Cabby. Remember what Hamlet said?
Well, I wasn't around at the time.
I could be bounded by a nutshell, yet count myself king of infinite space.
Oh, yeah, I remember it now.
Were it not that I have bad dreams?
Nice guy, Hamlet.
I wonder, does Anderson have bad dreams?
It's getting dark. I don't like these hills when it starts getting dark.
They're barren.
Yeah, and they're steep. Hey, the guy we're trailing is turning off the road.
Private driveway. Pull up to it and stop.
Okay.
The house is beyond the bend, quite near the road. Cabby.
Yeah?
I'm leaving you. Look, I want you to drive back to town. The instant you hit a place with a phone, call the police.
Yeah, and tell them what?
To warm a cell for a murderer. They can pick the murderer up here.
Okay, pal. But don't do nothing rash.
Oh.
Oh, hello, Anderson. Fancy finding me here,
Templer.
Mr. Templer, whatever would your grandfather say?
What do you want?
I'm admiring the country home of the Potts. By the way, where is Mr. Potts?
I don't know.
Oh, who's that, a sick friend?
Stay away from that door.
Nonsense. Looks like a charming door. Works, too. Oh. Mr. Potts. tied and gagged.
I told you to stay away from
me. I don't accept advice graciously, nor do I care for large... with lantern jaws. But lantern jaws are handy to hit. Now for you, Mr. Pott. We'll get the gag out of your mouth. There. You feel better?
Oh,
don't rush it. Your hand. Nice job.
Shh, quiet. Look out behind you.
Oh, hello, Claire.
Hello.
So glad you dropped in.
You are?
Yes. Remember I warned you about your butler? It was he who brought your husband here, tied him up, etc.
That's interesting.
You should ask me why I suspected him. Oh, all right, I'll tell you. When I visited your house and met Anderson for the first time, we had a little chat, in the course of which he remarked that I knew you weren't in the house before I searched it. That's logical.
Why?
Because how did he know I'd seen you outside the house unless...
Unless what?
Let me help you to your feet, Mr. Barley.
I can't move.
Standing up will help restore the circulation.
Unless what, Mr. Templer?
Oh, tut-tut. So formal, Mr. Templer. Unless, Claire, you told him.
Oh, why should I have told him that?
Obviously, because you and he were in on this little plot together.
Plot?
To kill Carter and frame your husband for the murder. Thus you would inherit the business. And the butler.
You're charming, Simon, but fantastically wrong. You're implying Anderson killed Carter?
No. He'll go to the gas chamber as accessory.
To whom?
To you.
Silly, Carter was shot from the back room. I was out front with you.
You were at the front door, that's true. Carter was shot as he was going into the back room. His back, therefore, was to us. And yet, if you remember, he was shot in the back. Afterwards, we remarked how he lay face upward with the blood coming out from underneath him.
You aren't a fool, are you?
Oh, dear. I was wondering how long it would be before you produced the pistol. Mr. Potts, can you stand alone?
I can't. I'm falling.
Oh, then fall in your wife's direction. Mrs. Potts, your gun, if you please. Thank you. Well, that's a good deal better. The police will be here shortly, and that will be that. Now, relax, Mr. Potts. You've fallen to rise again, but your wife, I'm afraid, has deflated her last tire. Here you are, Mr. Potts, in good health.
Mr. Templer, how could I have killed Carter and not killed him?
Simplicity itself, Mr. Potts. Your gun had been carefully loaded with blanks. Carter pretended to be dead.
But why should he have done that?
Your wife must have persuaded him that by doing that he would escape going to jail for theft. She'd have a hold over you.
Oh, she's not a very nice woman, is she?
No. With Carter murdered, she was preparing to have you disappear permanently. It would seem to the police that you'd killed Carter and fled to the country.
I can't thank you.
Don't bother. It was fun. But in the future, Mr. Potts, before you confess to murdering anyone, be sure you murder him.
Listening to another adventure of the Saint, the Robin Hood of modern crime. And now here is our star, Vincent Price.
Ladies and gentlemen, freedom is everybody's job. The Bill of Rights established our freedom and protects it. But freedom demands that each of us carry out our duties as a citizen. To vote in an informed way so that the best man is placed in public office. To serve on juries. To take an active interest in public issues. Remember, by making our form of government work better here, we strengthen democracy everywhere. This is Vincent Price inviting you to join us again next week at the same time for another exciting adventure of the Saint. Good night.
Tonight's script of the Saint is written by Louis Vittes. Our cast included Betty Lou Gerson, Stanley Farrar, Ted Osborne, Larry Dobkin, and Tom Brown. The music was composed and conducted by Harry Zimmerman. The Saint, based on characters created by Leslie Charteris, is a James L. Safier production and is directed by Thomas A. McAvity. Vincent Price is soon to be seen in Robert Lippert's production of The Baron of Arizona. All you Saint fans will be glad to know that the Saint comic books are on sale at all newsstands. Your announcer, Merrill Ross. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Truth. is stranger than his Ripley's. Believe it or not.
Officers in the Turkish Navy once were required to wear wooden replicas of their warships on their hats. Believe it or not. In a moment, I'll tell you an odd way to live to a ripe old age. Sir John Robertson, 5 times Prime Minister of New South Wales, Australia, had a peculiar, but for him, successful way to enjoy a good long life. Every morning for 35 years, Sir John bought 3 pints of rum. This shopping tour was invariably accomplished on horseback. The Premier consumed 1 pint of rum on the spot, gave another pint to his and then to his riding boots as a preventive against rheumatism. Believe it or not.
Box 13, with the star of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd, as Dan Holliday.
Dear Dan, I know all about your Box 13 ad in the Star Times, but I'm writing to you as a friend to come and see me. As you know, I'm teaching at Riddell College, not too far from where you are. Frankly, I've got a problem. I don't know whether it's anything to get excited about.
Excited about or not? Matter of fact, it's sort of personal. But, well, will you come to see me? Bob Lanham. Yeah, it was a personal problem, all right, at first. Then the whole thing got tangled around. Up to my neck.
And now, back to Box 13 and Dan Holliday's newest adventure, The Professor and the Puzzle.
Maybe it'll be a kind of a vacation for you, Mr. Holliday.
Could be, Susie, but somehow I have a habit of running into trouble, or it runs into me.
Well, why don't you be careful, then?
Oh, now, who has fun that way?
Remember that old saying, never trouble trouble until it... Oh, no, that's wrong. It's never trouble trouble until... No, it's...
Tell you what, Susie, you keep working on it. I'll be back in, say a week. Riddell College in the northern part of the state was one of those little places where classes are more important than football, and education is still the prime reason for the buildings being there. I drove to the campus, found the teacher's club where Bob stayed. He was a bachelor. And later at dinner...
I don't know, Dan. Maybe all this is silly, but... Well, I thought perhaps you could help.
Well, I can't unless I know what's troubling you.
Well, I was engaged to be married.
Was? Who changed whose mind?
Evelyn. I mean, she changed hers.
Oh, I'm sorry, Bob. What happened?
Well, I don't know, Dan. Everything was fine for a while, and then, poof, it's all off.
And you don't know why?
No.
Well, did you say something, do anything?
Not that I know of, but...
But what, Bob?
Listen, let's forget it. I almost sent you a wire telling you to forget my letter.
But you didn't. Which means you've got something else on your mind. Want to spill it?
All right. But don't let Evelyn know I told you.
Well, of course not.
Well, everything was fine, as I said, until her uncle committed suicide.
Suicide? Oh, I'm sorry, Bob.
Now she's going to marry Ed Macklin.
Oh, now wait a minute. Her uncle killed himself, and that makes her break her engagement with you and tie up with this Macklin.
Doesn't make much sense, does it?
Not enough to do much good. That all you know?
Yes. Just a day or so before he died, Evelyn sent back my ring.
Just like that, huh?
Oh, there was a note, but it wasn't an explanation. Just that she thought it wouldn't work.
No hint of that before Uncle's death?
None, Dan. Absolutely none. That's what's got me stumped. But I could understand it if it wasn't Ed Macklin. He's lots older than she is. Why, it was a kind of a joke between us that
Who is Ed Macklin?
Well, he was her uncle's assistant.
Assistant?
I'm making this as clear as a mud puddle. But Evelyn's uncle, Professor Gardner, was professor of mineralogy. Macklin was his laboratory assistant.
Oh.
And that's all I know.
You're sure?
Well, of course.
All right, now the $64 question. Why did Professor Gardner kill himself?
Dan, believe me when I tell you he didn't have a reason in the world. Not a single reason.
Well, that made as much sense as double talk from Alice in Wonderland. Bob stuck to it, too. The Professor Gardner didn't have a reason to kill himself. Evelyn, it seemed, had been raised by him. He was like a father to her. He was respected, well-liked, famous in a small way for his pamphlets and articles. And I got an explanation of his specialty later from Bob in his rooms.
He was a crystallographer, Dan. That means he studied the crystallization of minerals. You see, each mineral has its own particular crystalline formation. Salt, for example, that's common table salt, crystallizes in a particular way. Galena, we used to call it the crystal in the old radio sets, you remember, that has another form of crystallization. Well, Professor Gardner was an expert.
Well, was he working too hard?
I don't think so. It was never work for him.
Oh, I see. Well, what do I do now?
I don't know. I thought maybe you could... Well, I guess it's hopeless.
Look, Bob, is it certain that Professor Gardner killed himself?
What do you mean?
Well, you said there was no reason for suicide.
There wasn't.
Would anyone have wanted to kill him?
No.
You're sure, Bob?
I said no. Everybody liked him.
Maybe somebody didn't.
I didn't know of anyone.
And suddenly Evelyn breaks off her engagement with you just after...
Now, look, Dan, I'm sorry I got you up here. I guess I was stupid to write to you. Go back and forget the whole thing.
You're afraid Evelyn's involved.
I'm not.
That's what's in the back of your mind, but you're afraid to say so.
I said I'm not.
Okay, Bob. Still want me to go back? Well?
No. No, you find out what you can, Dan. Without getting anyone in trouble.
Trouble has a bad habit of popping up.
I don't want it to.
But you still want me to stay?
I guess so.
All right. But get this straight, Bob. I am not a detective.
What do you mean by that?
If I find anything fishy about this, I'll have to call the police.
They've already been in.
All right. I'll start from here. For the rest of the evening, we sat and talked. Bob was nervous. He wanted me to help because he was in love with Evelyn. But he didn't want me to help because he was afraid of what might turn up. Well, what could turn up? I found out. It was the next morning that I put in a call to Lieutenant Kling. Waited a half hour. Then ambled down to the local police department of Riddell.
Oh, yes, Mr. Holliday. Lieutenant Kling called here. Told me about you.
I asked him to.
Name's Carson. I'm chief of police here.
Yes, I know.
What can I do for you, son?
Well, if I'm butting in where I don't belong, just say so, will you?
Can't tell that till you spit out what's on your mind.
Chief Carson leaned back, lighted a corncob pipe, and waited for me to start talking. I liked him. Behind that pink face was a good, shrewd mind. I told him why I'd come to Riddell, and when I'd finished...
You ain't a detective.
No, not even a private one.
Just helping a friend, eh?
That's all.
Well... Can't say as I can tell you any more than Bob Lanham did.
You sure?
Yep. Found Professor Gardner in his laboratory.
Oh, at the college?
No, he had a little workshop back of his house. He was sitting at his table there, his own gun in his hand. Shot himself through the heart.
Oh?
Something sound odd to you, son?
Yes, a man doesn't usually kill himself that way.
That's right. Usually in the head.
But that's the way it was, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me... Are you satisfied with the case, Chief Carson?
Gotta be, son.
Which means you're not.
Now, look here, son. I'm only a small-town policeman, but I do my work the best I can.
Yes, I know. And the thing that's puzzling you is, why should Professor Gardner have killed himself?
Or, if he didn't, who else would have?
And there's no one else.
Nobody stood to gain nothing. Wasn't a rich man. His niece? No, I'm sure she didn't.
What about Ed Macklin?
Nothing to gain. Got it marked down as suicide, son. Just as dead-end as a blind rabbit burrow.
And so it was. A dead end. I didn't press Chief Carson any further. He was shrewd enough to look for clues, and there just weren't any. I went back to Bob's rooms and stopped outside the door. It sounded as though a square dance were going on with hot music. I opened the door fast. All right, break it up. Come on. Come on, break it up. Bob, stop. Bob, get back now.
Try it again, Lanham, and I'll turn it.
Dan, get out of the way.
Now, cut it out.
Oh, let him come on.
Get out of here, Macklin.
For now, sure. But try to see Evelyn once more, and I'll beat your head in, that's all.
He's a little bigger than you are, Bob. All around.
I'll kill him.
Now, take it easy. What happened?
Well, I tried to see Evelyn this afternoon. She wouldn't talk to me. Macklin came in a couple of minutes ago, and... Well, you saw what was happening.
Yeah, I did. It's a nice eye you've got there.
Shut up.
Oh, now, look, remember me?
I'm sorry, Dan.
Okay. So that's Macklin.
Uh-huh.
Sit down, Bob.
I don't want to sit down.
Sit down.
All right.
Now, that's better. Now, how far do you think you're going to get by running into his fist?
Now, listen, Dan, I've got to see Evelyn. I've got to find out what's going on.
All right, maybe we will. Why is Macklin afraid to let you talk to Evelyn?
I don't know, Dan.
I take it he's, well, to use an old-fashioned word, a rival.
I never thought so. But then...
But then, just before her uncle's suicide, she suddenly switches to Macklin.
But why? Why should she?
If we find the answer to that, Bob, we'll find out a lot of things. Now, let's get a side of beef and fix up that eye. You're going to look pretty silly teaching class tomorrow with a shiner. Didn't look silly in class. You see, he never got there. The next morning, I was pulled out of a nice deep sleep by nobody home. Oh. Hello.
Dan?
Yeah, sure. Bob?
Yeah. Dan, I'm in trouble.
Great. How could you get in trouble at 6 in the morning? That's too early.
It's not a joke, Dan. I'm in jail.
Huh? For what?
For killing Ed Macklin. Of course I didn't kill him.
I believe you, but look, haven't you got any alibi at all for last night?
No. When you left me, I went for a walk to think things over.
Fine. Everybody goes for walks when somebody gets killed. What time was Macklin killed?
Just about the time I was out for that walk.
Morning, Holiday. Nice day.
Oh, hello, Chief.
You want some breakfast, son?
No, nothing.
Well, you gotta eat, son. Got some ham and egg.
Nothing, I said.
Bring it, Chief. He'll eat it.
Uh-huh. You want anything?
Meaning me?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Oh, not at all. Looks bad, don't it?
Yeah. Why did you arrest Bob?
Well, you ought to know, son. You saw the fight they was having. One of the teachers living next door to Bob here heard it.
Oh?
Yeah.
Well, looks like you've got a motive, Chief.
Macklin takes his girl. They get in a fight.
I didn't kill him.
Now, I want to believe that, but...
Chief, I'd like to talk to Bob if I can.
Huh? Oh. All right, I'll get the ham and eggs. Be back in maybe 10 minutes.
Don't you believe me, Dan?
Oh, of course I do, Bob. Look, how was Macklin killed?
Knife. His own.
Uh-huh. Now, listen. I've got to see Evelyn.
What for?
Because I believe everything goes back to her uncle and his death.
How?
I don't know. I'd like to find out.
Well, nothing makes sense. Nobody had a motive for killing Professor Gardner.
And everyone says he couldn't have killed himself because he didn't have a reason.
So what have you got?
What have I got? Bob, I haven't the faintest idea. Yet.
Now back to The Professor and the Puzzle, another Box 13 adventure with Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday.
I didn't have a thing. Not a thing to go on. Bob was in a spot, but a good one. He had motive, opportunity. Yet I didn't think he'd kill. I believed he couldn't. And I kept thinking that Professor Gardner's suicide had something to do with Macklin's murder. But how? A harmless professor kills himself? His niece suddenly breaks off her engagement and switches to another man, and that man is killed, and who gets the brass ring on this merry-go-round? Well, it was about time to see Miss Evelyn Gardner. I found the address, drove there, and no one answered the door, but I heard someone in the back. So I walked around the side of the house, and putting some papers into an incinerator was a girl of maybe 24, 25. She seemed to be in a hurry, anxious to get it over with. Then she turned when she heard my steps.
Oh, who are you?
I'm sorry. My name's Dan Holliday.
Oh, yes, I've heard Bob speak of you.
Oh, go ahead. Finish what you were doing.
Well, I haven't got a match. I wanted to burn this rubbish.
Oh. Here's a match. I'll light it for you.
Oh, no. No, I can do it.
Oh, it's no trouble.
I said I'd do it.
Well, all right. Here's the match.
Thank you.
Whatever she was burning, she was anxious to get it over with. But she was a little nervous and the match went out.
Oh, please, have you another match?
No, I'm sorry. I'm afraid that was the last one I had.
Well, I'll have to get some. Will you come into the house?
Oh, thank you.
Did Bob come with you, Mr. Holliday?
Bob? Haven't you heard?
Heard? Heard what?
No. No one's told you?
Told me what? What are you talking about?
Bob's been arrested for the murder of Ed Macklin.
Oh, no. No, he didn't.
How do you know?
Oh, we've got to see him.
That might help, but how can you be sure Bob didn't do it?
Oh, he couldn't have.
Then who did?
I don't know. I don't know, but it wasn't Bob.
It has something to do with your uncle's death, doesn't it?
No, nothing. How could there be a connection?
I'm asking you.
I'm going to Bob. I've got to see him.
She was gone. I watched her drive away, then I hurried back to the incinerator. It was stuffed with papers. I dragged them out. Newspapers, wrapping paper, and then a little sheaf of receipts. Registered mail receipts for parcel post packages. And the signature of the sender was M.A. Gardner. Professor Martin A. Gardner. Now, why was Evelyn burning these? I looked a little longer and found something else. A carbon copy of a letter. It was partially torn, and all I could read of it was, "And this is the last job. Because it's the biggest, I want more than my usual fee. If I don't get it, you'll never get the finished products." And it was signed with the initials M.A.G. Martin A. Gardner. Okay, so I had a lead. But where would it get me? I found out. I didn't go back to the jail because I wanted to look a little longer at those papers I'd found. There was also a bank book, and the deposits totaled over $12,000. But it was in the name of Samuel Stoner. And the bank was in the city, not in Riddell. Back in my hotel, I was trying to figure this out when...
Hello.
You know, that thing's liable to go off.
Yeah, it could. Mind if I sit down?
I wasn't expecting company.
I'll sit down anyway.
Okay. Now that you're rested, goodbye.
In a hurry?
That's right.
Not so fast, sweetheart. Stay sitting. That's better.
What do you want?
What you've got right there.
These?
That's right. Push them across the table. Keep your hands on top.
Scared?
Not at all. Now, light a fire in that grate.
It's awfully warm, don't you think?
It could get hotter. Go ahead. Light a fire in that grate and step on it.
Oh, we're going to toast marshmallows, are we?
Could be. Now, put some paper on it.
Oh, pardon me, you don't have a log with you, do you?
I'll bring one the next time. Now, throw that stuff on the fire. All of it.
But I haven't looked it over yet.
Throw it on.
Well, what could I do? I threw all the stuff on the fire, watched it burn away. My company did, too. Watched it burn, I mean. He was a cool cookie. Then...
Pretty, isn't it? I used to sit in front of a fireplace and read when I was a kid.
But you didn't get to be president.
No, that's true. Poke it up a little. See that it's all burned.
It is.
Good. Now I'm going.
Oh, I was hoping you'd stay for dinner. We could put up a spit and roast a chicken.
Oh, I almost forgot. You're to stop nosing around.
Well, I guess I have to, with that stuff burned.
That was the idea.
Yes, I suppose you'd have killed me as you killed Macklin. A shot in the dark that it hit. His face, not so bad before, got twisted up. His fingers tightened on the trigger of his gun, but then he smiled.
You'll have to prove it. And something tells me you'll never see me again. So long.
Okay. Maybe the things were burned, but I remember one thing. An address. The address on the registered mail receipts where Gardner had sent the packages. And there was the name Samuel Stoner. Something told me Stoner and Gardner were the same and that bank account was his. But why? Why was he paid that much money? What was he doing? And there was only one way to find out. Go into the city and go to the address written on those receipts. I drove into the city. The address was an office building. And there were 50 firms doing business in that building. I looked at the directory in the lobby. No good. How could I visit 50 places and get right answers? Then I saw him. The man who made me burn the papers. He went into the building. He didn't see me. I tailed him. Watched him get into an elevator. I got close enough to hear him say,
"Seven, please."
Seventh floor. There were other people in the elevator. Chances are it'd make a lot of stops before it got to seven. Okay, the steps for Holiday. I wondered if I'd made it then. He went into an office that had no name on the door. I waited and then... There was an outer office with no one in it. Then I heard voices.
Are we clear?
Macklin's dead.
You killed him, I suppose?
Uh-huh. But it looks like someone else did. It was a perfect setup for a frame.
Oh, the niece business, huh?
Yeah. And there was another guy nosing around. He picked up some stuff the girl was going to burn.
Who was he? Why didn't you...
Look, two bump offs are enough. I only signed for the gardener job.
All right. Here's your money.
Uh-uh. Now that I know what the gimmick was, I want more.
Oh?
Yeah. Uh-uh. Don't reach for anything.
All right, I'll cut you in on this.
That's better.
Wait a minute. This other fella.
Don't worry. I made him burn the stuff he took from the incinerator.
You idiot, you should
have... I told you killing Macklin wasn't in on the deal. But he had this. I had to kill him to get it.
You sure you're clean on the gardener thing?
I know I am. I killed him with his own gun while the machines in that shop were running. Nobody heard the shot. Suicide.
All right, now get out of here.
I'm taking this with me.
Put that down.
Don't worry. We'll split on it. I just want to make sure there's no double cross. Now, see you later.
I stepped back, waited. Then as he came through the door, I knocked the gun out of his hand and grabbed it. Stay where you are.
What the... Well, so you a fellow...
Shut up. I'll take what you brought back.
No!
Hand it over, Cookie.
I...
Come on.
Well. Okay, let's all take a trip to headquarters. Well, with those two sweethearts safely tucked away, I began to put the pieces together. I did some reading, then I went back to Riddell. Went back to see Bob.
Dan, where you been?
Playing tag with a man, Bob.
Got a phone call, Holiday, from the city.
You're letting me out?
I think they are.
Yep. No more free meals on the town, Bob. Come on.
But Dan, what happened?
We've got to go see Evelyn right away. And straighten out a few things. Now, sit down. Both of you. Evelyn?
Yes?
I think I know the whole thing.
Yes, I guess you do.
What's everyone talking about? Why was I let out of jail?
Because you didn't kill Macklin. And Professor Gardner didn't commit suicide.
He didn't? How do you know?
He was killed. Look, Evelyn, Bob would have been convicted of Macklin's murder if I hadn't... Well, Bob, Professor Gardner was doing illicit diamond cutting.
What?
Yes, he had a perfect setup for it. The shop where he worked cutting and polishing his mineral specimens. The stolen diamonds were sent to him. He recut and polished them so they could be offered for sale. Isn't that right, Evelyn?
Yes.
But Macklin...
I think you'd better tell him, Evelyn.
Ed Macklin found out. Then my uncle was killed, and Macklin knew why.
You mean he threatened to expose your uncle if you didn't marry him?
Yes. He wasn't sure until after Uncle Martin was killed.
Killed by a hired killer. Hired by the man who was sending the diamonds to be recut. Professor Gardner was going to quit, but he received one last diamond. The biggest. He wanted more than his usual fee, or he would keep the diamond.
But Evelyn, how does she come into it?
Well, naturally, Evelyn wanted to protect her uncle's name, but Macklin's death prevented it. You see, Macklin found the big stone, and he was killed because he did.
Mr. Holliday, did you have a nice vacation?
Susie, it was just as if I'd never been away.
Huh? You mean you didn't take a vacation at all?
Well, not exactly, Susie.
Oh. You mean it was like a typical holiday.
I... What?
I made a joke. Get it?
Oh. Good night, Susie.
Next week, same time, through the courtesy of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd stars as Dan Holliday in Box 13. Box 13 is directed by Richard Sandville with an original story by Russell Hughes. Original music is composed and conducted by Rudy Schrager. The part of Susie is played by Sylvia Picker. Production is supervised by Vern Karstensen. This is a Mayfair production from Hollywood. Watch for Alan Ladd in his latest Paramount picture.
That's the Relic Radio Show for this week. I'll be back next Tuesday with something from The Whistler and the Black Museum. In the meantime, RelicRadio.com has past episodes of this show and all the other podcasts listed there, along with links to subscribe, download, listen, whatever you want to do. Find it all at RelicRadio.com. Also find a donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. I'd appreciate it if you're able to help. Thank you to those who have. Email me, relicradio@gmail.com. Thanks for joining me this Tuesday. I'll be back next week with a brand new episode of the Relic Radio Show.